Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki, hosting our show today, and I'm very excited to invite in Matthews Crossing Food Bank Executive Director, Jan Terhune. Welcome, Jan. Thrilled to have you, and we are excited to hear about all the great work that you guys are doing. Tell us first, just get us kind of acquainted, Matthews Crossing Food Bank, who are you?
We're a food bank. We reside in the East Valley of Maricopa County. We serve people who are seeking hunger relief, and we have several programs that people can access and make sure that they are not in a situation where hunger affects their ability to have a healthy and happy future.
And I've been living in the East Valley since 1979. My kids grew up in the Kyrene School District, Tempe School District. And of course, East Valley keeps growing. I'm aware of pockets of poverty and or where there's lower income. What is the need? Because I don't see a lot of it, I feel like, but maybe it's because I've got blinders on and I stay in my bubble.
That could very well be. I just want to share with you that we reside on North Arizona Avenue and between Knox and Ray. And that is in the 85225 zip code. And that zip code has larger pockets of poverty than others in the East Valley. So it's good to note that. And so the food bank resides there because our founders actually started in a church, you know, the typical kitchen food pantry, if you will. And that's a business model that many, many churches get into. And what they find is, it either outgrows them or they outgrow it.
And in meaning the need is greater?
Correct. The need is greater and they don't have the business acumen to step it up.
Okay,
enough.
Sure.
So our founders relocated and sought our 501c3 into that 85225 zip code purposely. I could talk about need all day long. I'll start by saying that we first went high tech in 2013, i.e. computers and databases. And so that's our first database of record. And in that year, about 35,000 individuals were able to access our hunger relief program.
35,000.
Yeah. So let me just shock you a little more. That number grew in 2013 from 35 to 48, 48 to 60 in those years. In 2017, we were serving over 80,000 individuals. And our last fiscal year, I use this number 123124, over 100,000 individuals from pre-K to 101 were able to access our services. And so when you say need, I look at it from the demand perspective. More people are knocking on our door and we're there to help them with hunger relief.
Oh my goodness. So prior to 2013, and I think you might have already said this, when did the mission begin?
The mission began at the church, St. Matthew's Episcopal Church, in 2001. And I think in that year, they have record of serving 800 individuals.
Wow.
Right. The neighborhood around them is very similar to where we are. And many were in need of hunger relief, which is why they sought out that service to their community. So let's say we started at 800. Then in 2005, they sought our 501c3, our nonprofit IRS designation. And so from 2005 to 2013, there's very little record keeping unless you might find index cards or things like that. So that's why we can go data-wise back to 2013.
And as a nonprofit, it helps to have that data, because it helps with funding, I would imagine, and grants and that sort of thing. But I'm guessing that prior to that, it was just boots to the ground, and you still are. I know that much.
That's true.
And it's just out there getting families fed.
Right.
So you mentioned K pre-K all the way on up through, I know you have a new program, don't you, for
seniors?
For seniors. You want to speak to that a little bit?
Sure.
And we'll circle back around?
Absolutely. So we're technically a food pantry. Food pantries are served by food banks, if you will. And in Arizona, there are five food banks. St. Mary's is to Phoenix proper what United Food Bank is to the East Valley. So United Food Bank is our partner organization. The senior food boxes, however, are a partnership with St. Mary's, and it's part of a federal program for seniors. And seniors who come to our food bank to get their regular, if you will, emergency food box are also eligible for the other staples that we get from St. Mary's. So this program is a pilot for us. Not that we don't have seniors coming in regularly, but the partnership with St. Mary's allows us to give 50 seniors each month these extra commodities, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Is it frequent that these folks are homeless, or are they, like, where is this need coming from? And I'm thinking back to, 2008 when everything shifted for us. Really, I know as a family personally, it shifted for us. So many of us were impacted. But are these folks who are living in homes or renting, or they, can you speak to the people that you serve specifically?
My pleasure. I will tell you, they look just like you and I. They are folks who find themselves in that space where things just don't meet up. I personally have been there a time or two. 40% of our clients are Caucasian, 40% are Hispanic. The other percentages are very small. So for the most part, they look like you and I, typical Arizonans, if you will. Many of them have cars because they drive up to our food bank. Most have jobs. I can tell you that the you and I thing is real. And if I may kind of segue into an example or a story where we had a family of four moved to Arizona. That's not unusual, right? And in this case, I meant just moved, like the U-Haul pulled into the parking lot, backed into the front door of our food bank, and they were able to get an emergency food box. And I'll speak to what that emergency food box is in a minute. But here is this family coming to Arizona, and they shared with the front desk where they registered that they were moving here for a new job. The new job starts in 2 weeks, so do your math, and the first paycheck arrives 2 weeks later. Mm-hmm. So this family had 4 weeks of how to figure out how to make ends meet on the food agenda, if you will. So our food boxes are designed to give about 6 to 8 days of hunger relief. So we solved a week's worth of problems for that family, candidly. And our food boxes are plentiful. While there is a good amount of non-perishables, there are even more perishables. And it typically is your milk, eggs, yogurt, cottage cheese, meat, and those kinds of things. So solving their week's problem was a real thing. And some of the food they may have received would even take them into the second week.
How would a family like that know about you guys?
You know, that's a curious thing. While I believe that word of mouth is still the most impactful in terms of driving people to places that they want to see or that they need, we do have a very good web presence and a social media presence. But I would venture to say somebody told somebody who told somebody. Mm-hmm. And we're one of three or four food banks in the East Valley. The ones that are nearest us in Chandler only serve Chandler residents. There are a few exceptions to that, but from the food banking perspective, that's the community they serve. So we are a relatively large producing, quote unquote, food bank, food pantry, if you will, in the East Valley, in that more food goes in and out of our food bank than the others in the neighboring area, if you will. And when I say producing, it's the food in, food out. And in our last fiscal year, over $2.1 million in food was distributed to our neighbors in need.
Wow. There's so many questions for me. And I have to say, I have my son Ivan in the studio today. He's 11. It's spring break. And he will likely remember the story. We were going through a very difficult time when he was quite young. He and I went to the store and I remember grocery shopping. And yeah, he's nodding his head. Yes. I remember grocery shopping and worried, trying to do the math in my head to make sure we had enough money in my account to pay for the groceries. And we got up to the cashier and I didn't have enough money. And here I am with this little guy. And at the time, I think Mike and I both were out of work. And I remember just standing there like, what do I do? And the cashier was so gracious. She's like, well, let me help you decide on what some of the things I'm going to get very teary-eyed to put back. I just remember the intensity of not having enough to make ends meet. And here's my little guy who, you know, I'm sure you see it all the time, who needs to be healthy so his brain can develop and his muscles can grow and he can, you know, and let alone just emotionally. And I have two other kids as well. They were with us at the time. And so to know that we have something like what you're offering and really throughout the state, and most it sounds like at least the metro area, we have opportunities for families who find themselves in these situations is such a blessing.
I'm touched by your story, so I have to kind of take a moment. Our food bank is also different in that we only require a current photo ID. So we're not asking you how much money you make, what you do for a living or not, who you hang out with, what kind of environment you live in. If you need food, you come to us and that's that. I love our little comment box because while most of them just say, thank you, we're blessed. Thank you. You people are nice. You're funny. You're happy. Most will say things, life stories like this will get me through until my next paycheck. Frankly, that's the most common comment. But the other comments, and I want to share this, is that they don't feel embarrassed to come to our food bank. Our food bank is clean. It's respectful. We don't ask questions we don't want the answers to, or that would be difficult for people to answer with other people in the line in front of them and behind them. Our core values are to serve folks with compassion. And we do that mindfully and diligently so that they can preserve their dignity.
Yes.
Just because you need food today doesn't mean you need food tomorrow, but tomorrow you might need gas money or the likes. And so food really does compete with whether you're going to pay rent or mortgage or with how much gas you're going to put in your car or not. And so that decision is left to us and not you, who might have found yourself in that space where it was difficult. And I think that because we serve people with compassion and they can preserve their dignity, they really have hope. I mean, true hope for things are going to get better. And that's really why we exist and why we make it as easy as possible for you to access hunger relief through our food pantry, if you will.
So important. Another story comes to mind with one of my older kiddos is in her 20s, but through Girl Scouts, we went on occasion to serve food in downtown Phoenix. And I remember years ago when we did it, and this goes back to your comment about how these, you know, these are folks just like you and I, clearly they are you and I. Years ago we went and I felt this difference. I don't think it was out of naivety, but it wasn't out of being egotistical. I just, as a young mother at the time, probably in my mid-30s, as people were coming through the food line, I could see there was a difference between us, whether they were homeless or whatever it was, mental illness, whatever it is. Years later, we were back serving again, and this was after the economy had crashed, and I had been through some of these life, you know, challenges personally, and we were serving again, and I was looking in the eyes of these people, and I think many of them had shifted and changed because more people found themselves in destitute. They're still humans. We're still all alike, but for me, it was like, wow, this literally could be me in the next month or the next year, and again, my heart just grew even greater, one, because I'd experienced my own struggles, but also because we're all one. We all need to lean on each other.
Yes. And without that, I think that's when you see communities, whole communities, not just households, but communities falter or fail. Collectively, we can do things better than we can do individually. That's just the way life is. I will say we're a solution to hunger relief. It's not It's not fixing your immediate situation. And our clients, they just embody that cliche, if you will, that they're just in that space that mm-hmm. you don't have all the solutions to. Now, I will say, over the past 4 years, our board of directors and our leadership at the food bank acknowledge that over 40% of our clients or neighbors in need, if you will, were children. Now, like I got to tell you, 40%. And I, you know, on any given day, I may be quoted by saying that's criminal because why is it the more children go hungry than others? So we aggressively sought out what we could do for our community in terms of serving children. While we provide emergency food boxes to anyone in need, you could only access that once a month. And we do that because of supply and demand. If we had offered it more, we may not have the food on the shelves to be able to do that. So you can get that once a month. We also do holiday food drives where we distribute over 1,000 holiday meals. And then we have the senior food boxes that we talked about. Something we haven't talked about that I'm very interested in sharing with you is our Meals to Grow program. It began as a partnership with Chandler Unified School District. We were very close with the director of the nutrition services, and the central kitchens had agreed to pilot program to feed more children. And so every Wednesday night, they brought over warm meals to the food bank, and we tried as hard as we could to get children to come and eat those warm meals. And I'm not going to say it failed, but it was many lessons learned. The first was, and I can remember the first time feeling this way, is that the program was for students. It wasn't for students and parents. And I just felt like a child eating in one room and a parent not eating in another room really wasn't.
It didn't make sense.
Yeah, it just wasn't working. And it was the other lesson learned was go to them. Don't have them come to you because that was awkward. It required transportation. It required a certain time of the day. It required competing with other things like after school activities, etc. So we learned a lot in that year. So we switched to a popular food banking business, which was backpacks. We started with 100 backpacks in the East Valley, you know, a few here and a few there. And I think that was in the summer of 2013. Now, mind you, when I say 100 food backpacks, that is a backpack on 100 backpacks on Fridays every week during the school year. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of backpack food. That program now serves 1,000 students in the East Valley. So we've grown from 100 to 1,000 backpacks. Along our journey from those early days with warm meals converted to backpacks, our McKinney-Vento homeless liaisons at the school were reporting to us that backpack program did, in fact, provide hunger relief over the weekend. But there were 5 days during the school week where, especially in your junior and senior high schools, where students who are eligible for free and reduced lunches or meals don't want to take advantage of that. You know, the stigma with the having need, whatever sure. may be. So some students in the junior and senior high school who were going hungry because of that. And so teachers, literally a counselor or a McKinney-Vento homeless liaison, would have a closet in their office or their classroom. They've opened it up. They put in some shelving. And we piloted three what I call food closets in the summer of 2017. And that included a partnership with Chandler Gilbert Community College, where they had two of those food pantries on their Williams campus and on their Pecos campus. So we started with three. Now we're up to 15.
Oh, wow.
And
in just 2 years or a year and a half.
Wow. Exactly. And that's a very popular distribution unit or business, if you will. And I expect we'll do more. It's also more cost effective than the backpacks, because the teacher can make the decision with the student on how much they need to solve whatever crisis they are in. And the food closet also has another benefit, because the counselor or the the school liaison can recognize a family in crisis where the whole family may need a meal this evening, as opposed to a backpack, which is designed for one child for an entire weekend because it has two breakfast, two lunch, and two dinners in it. And we know full well that that backpack doesn't serve just one student over the weekend. So there's your hunger relief solution to weekends and weekdays. Now what happens is summer comes along.
Right, and the breaks.
Yeah, exactly. So during the school year breaks, our backpacks would typically always be distributed on a Friday. If a school liaison says to us, six kids or 16 or 60 need help over that week, we'll compensate and double up, if you will, on that school's need for breaks. But in the summer, while there are free and reduced meals by the school district, their access points are not always convenient. I'm not saying they're not they're unsuccessful, but that food source is also threatened by how state and local and federal decisions that are being made. So we started with what we call 100 snack packs in the summer of 2018, last summer, we distributed 7,000 snack packs, and we're planning on 10,000 snack packs. Now, they're not your backpack where you have two breakfasts, two lunch, and two dinners, but they do have a fruit, a vegetable, it may be in the form of a juice, a cereal bar, lots of snickety stuff, but it's enough. It's something. It's not everything. And when the day comes that we can be doing backpack meals or food closets during the summer, that would be our hope. We're not there yet, primarily because we, did seek funding to buy food. So we think we've done a really good job.
Oh my goodness, it's amazing to keeping up with the demand.
That's right. And here, let me just say, capacity building for food banks in general is very, very difficult. When I say capacity, there's never enough room to store food. There's never enough money to buy food. There's never enough staff to figure out how to get the food in and out of there. We've done a really good job with that. And I'm proud to say we're right in the middle of our second expansion project. Essentially, think of our food bank as one retail space in a strip mall. And in 2015, with a partnership with McCarthy Building Companies and the Chandler Leadership Group, we were able to take our 1,000 square feet to 2,000 square feet, which was just essentially another retail space. Mm-hmm. So up until this June, we had about 2,000 square feet. The backpack program was killing us in terms of geography, not a lot of place to store food. And so our board of directors were mindful of that, and they allowed us July 1 to expand another 2,000 square feet.
Wow.
So, and right now there's food on all 4,000 square feet. But I got to say, it makes me smile. Our food does come from sources that we don't have to pay for. And to say no to a pallet of cereal is just criminal, if not scary, when you're running a food bank. So we're filling the footprint, we're filling everything up. Now, I will say it needs some work, and this is the part I get excited about. We've secured the services of an architect. His name is Steve Parody, and he's doing the pro bono design layout for us. It's totally cool. I can't wait till it's done. And then we just recently have started a partnership with Sunt Construction Company, yes, and they'll be doing the entire rebuild, or whatever you want to call it, remodel for us, so that what is now four clunky retail spaces one nice warehouse. So
please, when it's all done and you have a little bit of time under your belt to know how well it's going, come back and bring a representative from both of those companies so that we can thank them, we can celebrate, and we can also just explain what the difference it made for all of you.
Absolutely.
It'd be a great story to tell. Yeah.
This story's the chapter of the book hasn't ended. So.
No. And unfortunately, right? Because we would love to see that happen. And you serve a specific need. Conscious Capitalism of Arizona that I mentioned on the beginning of our show is our location sponsor. And before we went on air, Jan and I were talking about one of our goals by 2040 is to eradicate abject poverty worldwide. It's a big nut to crack, and it's very different than what we're talking about, although it is also the very, very much the same. But we've found that capitalism over and over again continues to prove that is the single best way to help shift a population, to help people learn and to grow. And if we can be successful as business owners and or nonprofits, and we can lift each other up and help change legacy and change tradition where things aren't working well, and give somebody the skills that they need for the job, and so they can go get a paycheck on a regular basis and feel good about themselves and bring food home for their family, we can make a big difference. So I'm very much happy to be aligned with Conscious Capitalism and all the folks here at Max 6. We, again, we were talking about the beginning. Tell me about your background. I'm fascinated. You were at a University of Arizona undergrad, and then you went on for your master's at Indiana?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so then you came home. But tell us like how you landed here with this particular organization and what's the path there?
Okie doke. Thanks for asking me. Yes, I'm a proud graduate of the University of Arizona.
You mentioned sorority too. Give us a shout out to your sorority as well.
And I'm also the chair of their annual fundraising event. So my sorority is Delta Gamma, and the alumni group here in Phoenix is very large, and we're hosting a Tables That Bloom fundraiser. And you could check it out at tablesthatbloomphoenixphx.com.
So, okay, good.
So my sisters will be really proud of me, but that's kind of a diversion. But I want to have this opportunity to say that we raise money to support the Foundation for Blind Children and our National Foundation, which also supports that. So when I was an undergraduate, our philanthropy was the Foundation for Blind Children. And so that's something near and dear to my heart as well. So my journey began after I graduated. I started work for a good friend of mine, Michelle, and we both were working at the Muscular Dystrophy Association. And it was my platform for understanding how to help others. And I haven't deviated from that since then.
Clearly.
And nor will I ever. My only little diversion was I taught after I finished my master's in Indiana, I taught at the university there for 4 years. So, but learning's, I'm compassionate about that too. So I still feel like I was giving back. After that, after I got my MBA, I left the university because I didn't have a PhD, nor did I want to seek one out. So I started at a very small nonprofit in rural Indiana. And I grew that from a very itty bitty nonprofit to, when I left, it was at over a $5 million agency. So
wow.
My particular interest is taking small nonprofits and make them strong and grow. And that's what's happening in Matthews Crossing. I left that small itty bitty, went to a state organization, and then went to Capitol, went to Washington, D.C. I worked for a national nonprofit there in child advocacy. And I'm still very passionate about that, as I think you can see with our
Absolutely.
Meals to Grow. So always been in nonprofit management, always been in leadership, and always wanting to take things to the next level. And that's what we're doing at Matthews Crossing. I got to be honest with you. I started there and their annual budget was under $100,000. Now, let's say I was making $50,000 at the time. And that certainly wasn't it. But let's say that were true.
For number's sake, sure.
Yeah. So I would have had to been raising my salary plus a little more to feed people. It was really, really scary proposition. I had two other job offers. I didn't know that I really wanted to go back to work, but I had three offers came in on the same day. And I swear to this day it was meant to be.
Oh, yeah.
Because the other two were really lucrative, could have included things like health insurance and retirement. But I chose Matthews Crossing. And for this very reason, I knew it was small. It was on unequal ground and the ground was shifting. And I knew that I had the strength to see it to a viable nonprofit. And I did that. And we're moving forward.
Clear, so. And it's your calling. Like, wow, what a great example of who you are and how you show up. I know we talked about faith again before we came on air, just kind of vicariously in our conversation. But to have those two other offers and just to really have to sit back, I'd imagine, and go, okay, I know where I'm being led.
That's right. Absolutely. I got to tell you this. When people ask me about our environment at Matthew's Crossing, I'm going to say it's spirit-filled. In other words, there are some things I can't explain. And I go back to my first 2 weeks. Things were happening. I'm like looking around going, what? Like, how did that guy just really walk in with a $500 check? Or really, that guy came to tell us he stopped in for an emergency food box because he hadn't eaten in 2 days. And he had an interview that afternoon. He was able to eat, take a nap, and he was spot on for his interview. Mm. And I was thinking, you know, I had nothing to do with that. But what is happening here? So I remember going down the street to a pastor of a church that was on our board. And I went and said, I can't explain this. I said, I'll have to take credit because I don't know that you all trust me that I'm going to take this from nothing to something. And I'll take credit. But there's something happening inside that building. And he's, of course, got the good word out and turned a page, whatever, and said, all you have to do is make yourself available. So, wow. And since then, I can tell you those unbelievable moments
keep happening.
Oh my gosh, in big ways. Just
well,
amazing.
Clearly, your example of the building expanding and these great partners who are coming on to help, it sounds phenomenal. What can our listeners do to help continue in this direction? What needs do you have, and how do we help fill that?
Well, our three needs are very simple. One is food. And I'll take this time to say our website at www.matthewscrossing.org has a place if you're willing to donate food or do a food drive in your neighborhood, at your place of work, at your place of faith. We can give you all the supplies. We can come to you with those supplies, and we're happy to pick up the food.
When you say supplies, real quick, like bags to, I mean, what do you mean by supplies? Right. What do we need?
A food drive box.
Oh, sure.
You know, you've seen them in grocery stores. They're about waist high. Yeah.
Around the holiday time is when we usually see them.
You do.
But the need is there all
year
round. Okay.
Now, I'll tell you, food banks struggle in the summer. So we're coming up on our most difficult times. And in that, the same time that people are leaving the valley to cool off, that means we have fewer volunteers.
Right.
The same time those people move, they're not bringing food in the door, so the supply on the shelves dwindles. It's the same time that kids are out of school, so the demand is up, supply is low.
Yeah.
So food drives all year round are vital to all food banks, food pantries. So food is really our most important asset.
Anything too small? I mean, like, I'm looking at Ivan like, okay, my mind is already kind of thinking, how can we help as a family? But are you looking for, is there a certain quantity that we have to show up with? Or really, you guys will be happy to take anything?
We are, as long as you've done due diligence and not brought us things that will expire soon.
Perfect.
And I could talk about that
another
time.
In a bit, you bet.
But I'll say it happens routinely. The food bank closes at 12 and we lock the doors and I'm in the building. And I can hear somebody knocking. And if I'm not by myself, which could be risky, we'll open the door and there'll be somebody who's leaving town. They were in town for the winter and they're leaving. They cleaned out their cupboards and they have 2 grocery bags for us. So that happens all. That's not a food drive, but it is food.
Sure,
and it is
sure.
Not wasting food. And I don't know if you know this, and I'm not sure of the current statistic, but over 30% of America's food is in the dumpsters.
I believe that.
And I have learned not to throw food away. And while we can't take prepared food, we have to take non-perishables. Mm-hmm. It's still, if you're going to throw out food, call me so I can repurpose it for you, even though we can't take it. So food drives, I mean, we just had a young man bring in peanut butter, probably 40 cases. And he just told his teacher in the classroom, I want to do this for X period of time. And on their website, it says their most needy item is peanut butter. Can I see how much I can raise?
And he did.
It was over 200 pounds.
And peanut butter, what a great item to have, right?
Because
it's the protein and it lasts longer. And
right. And when we don't have meat.
Yeah, that's what you're passing
you're
out.
You're right. Absolutely. So totally. So food drives are one way. Mm-hmm. The second is volunteering. Food's an asset, and so too is volunteer hours. So we have seasonal needs, we have day-to-day needs, and we can accommodate small groups and large groups. So if your employer offers, as our good friends at Intel do, mm-hmm. offers you an opportunity to do group events, one for the group experience or two to help a cause in the neighborhood, knock on our door or go to our website, and we can accommodate a group event. We've done them as small as five to as large as in the couple hundreds, although we had to do it over shifts, over a period of time. So volunteerism is not only a good civic contribution, it's also what we need desperately. So again, our website at matthewscrossing.org does have a place for you to express your interest in volunteering. Mm-hmm. And it's always a good experience. I got to say, that example I used of the young man who was able to get a food box, rest, and go to his interview. I heard the volunteer on Monday, her name's Jolene, answer the phone, and I heard her just like a mother would do. You get down here before 12 o'clock, you'll have time to eat, because he hadn't eaten in 2 days, and you'll have money for, you'll have food for the rest of the week, and you'll get to sleep, and you'll perform well at that job interview.
And he did.
And he did. He showed up. And she greeted him at the door. She went through the line with him, had a conversation, helped him with his food out to his car. It's that spirit-filled thing.
I was going to say, no doubt, was she also praying for him as he walked out the door while he had his interview? Yeah.
And all of us were, actually.
Yeah. So volunteers, I obviously need volunteers. How lean is your staff? It sounds like the volunteers are really a necessary component of what makes everything work.
Absolutely. So our food bank is open 15 hours a week, 9 to noon on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Fridays, and on Wednesday, 4 to 6. So that's a total of 15 hours. It takes about 70 volunteers to keep our doors open.
Wow.
While we have a lot of staff bodies, there's 11 of us in the building. Well, not in the building. Most of us are doing things in the community. That only equates to 4 full-time FTEs. So our overhead on staff time is low, although most of our staff time is getting food or giving food. So, but volunteer 70 to keep us open 15 hours a week. And a volunteer might be, here I can give you an example. When food comes in our door, it has to be weighed. So there, you could be weighing food and recording it, and it gets recorded. Another volunteer takes that record of how much food came in that morning and takes it home and puts it in our database. Another volunteer might be, after the food's weighed, we have a sorting station, and they could be checking for expiration dates and marking through UPC codes so that you don't, the food doesn't show up in grocery stores and exchange items. So we have to do that. And then we have to sort it and get it on the shelf. So there's a lot going on. That's behind registering the clients and giving the clients the actual food, the distribution. So that's why the building's, a lot's going on.
Yeah, and it's exciting. I can imagine that now, I think you mentioned there's 4 different separate areas, and the flow that they're going to create for you is just going to be magnificent. Yeah.
Bring sun dawn. We can't wait to get that.
Really, really
fixed.
Great. And then financial donations. Where some of the funding? Obviously, there's some grants and there's partnerships and that sort of thing. But as individuals and or businesses, because this is Business Radio X, how can we help support financially? You're not a we can't do the tax credit, or can't?
You can.
Oh, really?
Totally.
Okay.
Thanks for doing my job.
Okay.
So the third resource or asset to our food bank, food volunteers, is in fact financial gifts. Our largest source of financial giving is from individuals.
That's the largest source for you.
Yes, it is. The largest, over half of our revenue is from individuals. And I'll tell you, the Arizona tax credit is a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say more. I've never been in a state where that was available. In all my 40 years of working with nonprofits, this is the first time I've experienced that. Tax credit in Arizona can go to charitable organizations, and we're a qualified charitable organization because of our 501c3 and because we can and do serve low to moderate income families. Tax credit can also be used for education, and tax credit can also be used for foster care. The important thing is to know you don't have to choose one of those. You can do all three.
Yes.
So we don't compete with your desire to contribute to schools or to other causes. And the tax credit for 2018, if you haven't filed your Arizona tax credit, you can still give to a charitable organization up to April 15th when you file your taxes. And it'll be your tax credit that goes to your 2018 return. So on matthewscrossing.org, you can make that tax credit gift. Now, what's cool about the tax credit is it's a dollar for dollar credit. A credit is very different than a deduction. The credit says if you were going to have, if you file your return and you were going to have to pay the state of Arizona money, you can not pay the state of Arizona that money, and you could give that very dollar back to a nonprofit, and you get it back. So if you get,
no brainer.
So if you're filing jointly, you can file up to $800. You can give up to $800, and so you do that. You file your taxes, and $800 comes back to you. It's just a way cool, and it's only $400 if you're filing singly. But I'll tell you that $800 can provide 8,000 meals. So your contribution in dollars goes further than what you might do with purchasing food and bringing it to us, because we can purchase food as low as 12 cents a pound. So you wouldn't be able to go into the dollar store and do that necessarily. So we could make your, we could stretch your dollar.
Stretch that dollar.
Yeah. So you still have Arizona taxes to file up to April 15th, and a tax credit is the best way to go. Now, your businesses, that's another thing. What I encourage folks who think about engaging their employer is not only the food drive, which around the holidays is a fun thing, and people are motivated around the holidays to give, but to seek your employer's attention on perhaps a employer giving matching program. Our good friends at Intel do this. Let's say you file a tax credit for $800 or a tax donation to Matthews Crossing, and you work at Intel and you give through their giving program. So you don't give it to us. You give it to Benevity, which is Intel's matching employee gift matching. And then they, in turn, double that. They match that $800. And so your $800 gift becomes $1,600.
Wow.
Magic. So that's the first thing I would encourage employees to seek the support of their businesses. There are also other employee giving campaigns. They're a little more complex to explain, but businesses have them. You're just, if they don't have them because they're not large enough, certainly a food drive is the way to go. And if your group needs to do a team building, what better thing to give back to your community?
Yeah, love it. My gosh, so many opportunities to serve and jump in and help. With your volunteers, I would imagine you find people are part of your program and there to help you month, after year, because they, again, this faith-based and very soul-filled experience, they know that they're making a difference.
Yeah. So I want to say 90% of our volunteers comes from places of faith.
Excellent.
So, yeah. Yeah. And most are in that chapter in life where they're retired and they're pretty darn serious about giving back to their community. Mm-hmm. And in particular, our volunteers are very serious about fighting hunger. So it's the door's open.
Yeah, wonderful. Can you give us the hours then again for the food bank?
Sure. So Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday from 9 to noon. And then Wednesday is our evening, afternoon evening, 4 to 6.
Mm-hmm. Great. You mentioned obviously the expansion of the building. That's very exciting. Is there anything else that's coming up in the, you know, the rest of this year that would be worth sharing? Do you do fundraisers as well? I mean, like a gala or a silent auction, that sort of thing.
Yep, we do all of the above. We actually just finished our annual gala. It was theme was Mad Hatter, Not Your Ordinary Tea Party, and we had a blast.
It sounds like fun.
The building was as full as it's ever been, and we think we've done well over the years. I think we've matched that significantly this year. That was February 28th, but it's not too early to mark your calendars for 2020. And our event then is March 5th. So okay. March 5th to 2020. Doesn't that sound ring a bell or something like that?
Right.
So we do that. Now, summers, I mentioned, are tough on food banks. And so what we've done in partnership with Dulos Consulting, launched some summer programs that'll help sustain, keep our doors open until people get back in town. And so what I want to share with you this summer, we do, we're going to be doing an online raffle opportunity for a four Southwest Airlines tickets, a contribution from Southwest Airline, and four Disney tickets.
Oh, so fun.
So we're giving away a happy experience and trying to raise money that way this summer.
And we can get those tickets online as well.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, shout out to Dulas Consulting. Yes, I know when Dre and I were talking about having you on, he had shared a personal story for him that had he not had an opportunity to have food from places, you know, food banks, that he doesn't know how he would have survived some of those years. I'm sure he shared that personal story with you as well a handful of times.
Yes, he has. And that's why I think he was drawn to help Matthew's Crossing Food Bank. What I will say to you is that Dre is spirit-filled himself. And that story he did share with a room of 300 at our annual gala.
He did.
I just got
chills.
I know. He and his son Felix are going to be a tough act to follow next year. But his point was, if he didn't have food at that critical time in life, he may not be there for his son, mm-hmm. or may have never even had a son. And his point was, because of his past experiences, his son won't go hungry.
Right.
And he won't find himself in a place that his family will suffer. And they're a lovely family, his wife and son.
I've met his wife and his son. And of course, Dre is very dear and near to my heart.
That makes two of us.
Oh, my goodness. So fun. So I'm pleased that he was able to share. And recently, right, just a couple weeks ago.
Yes, the 28th of February.
I love it. Thank you, Dre, for not only your time and commitment, because I know this is a very important mission for him. Wow.
Yeah, you know what? I want to give out a shout out to Dre and Dom and Kara, Matt, all of them, because they're used to working in the for-profit community, mm-hmm. and they gave us a chance. And my vision was, because I'm getting up there in age, was to do something infrastructurally, if you will, that will sustain the nonprofit business, the food banking, long after I was gone. And that's what they're bringing to the table. They're creative, they're diligent, they work hard, and they seriously listen to you when you want to have a solution to a problem that will have that will be a solution into perpetuity. So the long and the short of it is, they're helping us with our marketing. I wish every nonprofit, small or large, paid attention to that business model. I think some food banks in particular are very small. You really need to fix your business first, mm-hmm. and then your mission. Because without the business, that is the capital, the ground that you sit on, and those things, you wouldn't have a business at all. So what Dre and his company have done for us in the marketing realm is helped us enhance our presence on the web, enhance our presence in social media, and enhance our ability to build a donor database that will take us into perpetuity.
Mm-hmm. Well, what a great legacy that you will be leaving behind years from now.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Yeah. And this is, as you were talking about your experiences throughout your career, this commitment to take a small and perhaps floundering nonprofit and see it through to really great success and growth speaks volumes about not only what you've done in the past, but also currently what you're doing now.
Well, I wish I could take all the credit.
Well, I get that. Yeah. So speak to that. It doesn't happen alone, but you've got to have somebody at the helm, somebody who's driving it and knows not only how to work with people and bring out the best of them, but also put some projects and management behind that so that it becomes sustainable programs.
Yeah. So what I try to do is, most people are able to figure out a solution to a problem that's right in front of them. What I try to do is back up and go way mile high and look at, if that problem's happening today, this solution may work to solve it today, but what about tomorrow or 3 years from now? So my staff gets tired when I sit back and my eyes roll in the back of my head. And it's not because I'm not paying attention to them. I'm thinking way high about a systematic approach to a problem, mm-hmm. as opposed to let's get by this here and now. Although many nonprofits have to, and you have to get
to do it when you need to do it.
Yeah. But then do it in the way that will make sense every time you happen on this circumstance. Mm-hmm. And we have staff meetings every Monday, and I'll be going back there for our staff meeting. And they actually started as just a conversation about how to fix a problem. Now they're almost afraid to email when they have ideas, because on Monday we're going to fix this big problem and make it sustainable, whether any of us or all of us are in the building. Mm-hmm. So it's a systematic approach to solving problems, and people do that every day.
Well, and as many interviews as we've done here at Phoenix Business Radio X and really our network overall in the 12 years we've been broadcasting, we consistently hear that from leaders, again, for profit, nonprofit. It's people, it's process and systems, and it's also having that vision so that you can propel everybody forward. I mean, if you're missing any one of those pieces, and I'm really breaking it down quite simple, but that is really what matters. You've got to have somebody in a group of people who are willing to say, here's the situation. Where do we want to be? Not only in, you know, 6 weeks, 6 months, or 6 years, but how do we create a system around this so that it is to the degree it can be automated and it flows and it works well so that we're serving our mission and our purpose. So congratulations for taking your group where you have. And tell me again, it's been how many years you've been?
I started with Matthews Crossing in October of 2014.
Okay.
And I'll tell you right then that the board of directors at the time had discussions about closing our doors.
They had,
but they took a huge leap of faith and knew that if they could hire somebody who could get them through the tough times and could see the path forward, that they might have had a chance. And they took a risk in hiring me. I had been in child advocacy all my life. But the track record, you know, it spoke for itself. But it also was a time for the board of directors then to shift from having to run the day-to-day and let somebody else figure out the day-to-day and the path forward. And so hats off to those folks in 2014 who hired me. I could rattle their names off. They're still good friends of ours, but they took a leap of faith. Just as they hired me, the board then takes those leaps of faith and continues to make sure that we can build our capacity. Well, so don't do it alone.
No, for sure. And what a shame that would have been with the numbers that you've shared early on in our segment. Had the doors closed, and then not that the passion would have gone away, but the ability to serve, that would have been awful for our community.
No, and you know that "build it, they will come" is kind of true.
Yes.
No, it's really true.
You have a slogan similar. What did you? You have a little slogan. I think I read.
My personal
your
one.
Yes. Do more better.
There you go.
Yeah, do more better.
I stole it.
No, I didn't steal it. It's yours. I read it off of your bio. But yes, build it and they will come. I mean, I think that's been your theme throughout our whole conversation today. It's just trusting, leaning in, getting the work done, and knowing that there's going to be a positive and great results as a result of all your efforts. Yeah. We got squiggly here. Well, thank you again for being here today. I'm so pleased to get to know you better. We had a chance to meet through the Organization for Nonprofit Executives, an introduction only from Dre, but also Barbara Blalick with Treasures for Teachers, and Michael, who runs the one organization. And you're the president. Do you ever sleep? I'm thinking of all the things that you've told us that you're currently involved in.
Well, purposefully, you know, when you want to build a meaningful life, you know, you have to give back. And certainly my history with Delta Gamma is one that I was committed to then and will be till I'm not on this planet. And I joined the Organization for Nonprofit Executives, soon after I came to the Food Bank, because I know full well, as an executive director, you can find yourself stuck in those four walls and never get out. And I knew I needed to network with other people who are making decisions like mine. And that's exactly what one is. Mm-hmm. So I committed to leadership then, and I'm now the president. And we have an upcoming event in April 4th. It's Leaders Day. So you check out. It's 1AZ.org.
Yep. And I'll be there for Leaders Day. I plan to attend. Well, one more time, how can we get a hold of you and your incredible organization? And then we'll wrap up the show.
One more time. Our website is www.matthews.org. Our phone number is 480-857-2296. And if you want to darken my doors, you can email me at jan@matthewscrossing.org.
Thank you, Jan. So fascinating, so important, the work that you're doing, and obviously leading with great heart and compassion. Thank you. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X, broadcasting live from within the Max 6 Conscious Capitalism Arizona studio. Some media leans left, some lean right. and Wheeling Business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki.